Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the MLL Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. I'm the Gear and Lifestyle Editor for Inside Lacrosse. And today we have a very special guest joining us. The maestro of face-offs, the leader of the Face-Off Academy, soon to be actually now retired, but still trying out for Team USA, Greg Grenley. And Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. If you hear any craziness on this recording, it's because Jax is feeding.
Yeah, absolutely. Baby beast in the house. So let's kind of talk about your retirement right off the top so we kind of get it out of the way. Like, what led to the decision? And, you know, the question that everybody asks to a retiring athlete, is there any chance for a comeback?
Well, I can tell you, I'll answer the second part. There's zero chance I'll play in the MLL again. My wife and I had a conversation when she was in her third trimester later in last year. And, you know, she was just kind of like, look, like, I've been a good soldier. I've supported you and everything you've done. You know, when you were traveling every week for the MLL, then when you wanted to sell your strength training company and go on the road and work every other weekend in the FOA. And there were, you know, there were days where, last year there were weeks where, you know, I play on a Saturday, I take a flight to a clinic on a Sunday somewhere else in the country, and then I fly somewhere else, and then I'm back home Wednesday, and then I practice Thursday night. And she was just like, once we have this kid, like, I want you to be around as much as you can. And I was also a season where I was coming off of my broken foot, and I had just had foot surgery. I've had people like Carcaterra and close friends of mine be like, dude, why are you putting yourself through this anymore? Like, you don't have anything else to prove. So there's a lot of thinking that went into it. So, you know, I told her, you know, I either want to play ML one more year or I want to try to make the World Games one more time. And so I decided that USA was the one thing that I don't have a gold medal. And I still feel like I let a lot of people down the last time around. So that was the choice I went with. And I was like, once I made the choice, I didn't go back. I haven't wavered at all. And I'm glad I made that choice and I'm fine with it.
What's your favorite moment from playing in the league in your entire career?
I think the most impactful was finally winning the title. That was the best day ever. And then obviously I'll never forget my first MLL game. You know, the announcer mispronounced my name. No one knew who the hell I was. And I scored like 9 seconds into my career. And I just remember, like, after the game was over, it was like a blur. It was like, oh my God, like, I think I belong here. So I think those are the two moments that really stick out to me as two of my favorites. There's so many memories in a 12-season career that it's hard to pick two. Those are it.
Who irritated you the most on the field, and who were you the best at kind of irritating with, you know, however many faceoffs you would win or anything like that?
Jeff Snyder. Snyder and I had no idea who each other were when we played against each other, when he played for the Outlaws and I played for the Dragons. We talked massive amounts of trash to each other. When I first came to the league, I was a trash talker. I really don't do that anymore. But the only time that I would open my mouth was to get into Jeff's ear a little bit, and Jeff would do the same thing to me. And over the years, Jeff and I become acquaintances. We know each other well. We respect each other. He actually sent me a text right after I retired, congratulating me. But you know, we always gave it to each other because we knew that we had to try to gain an inch. We were such rivals on the field, and we respected each other's ability that we tried to gain an inch that way.
You kind of took a long route to where you are today in terms of, like, you know, being recruited and achieving a lot of your success later on in your career. What advice would you give to future lacrosse players that want to play in the MLL but maybe aren't, you know, top-tier recruits right now?
Listen to constructive criticism. Like, learn to shut up. That's what I had to learn. I had to learn to shut up. And you need to listen to people that say things you don't want to hear. And then you take that information and you use it. Not just as motivation, but actually to make yourself better. And I think, you know, I've experienced this as a face-off academy coach where kids are like, you know, I want to play for Johns Hopkins. It's like, you're not going to play for Johns Hopkins. But you could play for this school or you could play for this school. And that kid can either take that information and say, I hate him. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm going to play for Hopkins, which is fine, but it probably won't get you where you want to go. Or you can take that information and say, Coach, why don't you think I can play for Hopkins? Well, how can I make myself better? And are there other options for me? Like, learn to, like, just swallow your pride and shut up and listen. And you'll get way further than you are now.
All right, let's have a little fun here. So I have this theory on that face-offs evolved quickly, like quicker than any other position in lacrosse, and that because of that, you can almost see the lines and the eras that were observed in the MLL. And my theory is the first era is like Doug Shanahan, Paul Canabin, like two very different guys with different approaches. Shanahan brings this athleticism, all-around skill to the position. Canabin brought a more refined technique. There's other guys like Andy Towers here. I remember this face-off guy for the Cannons that no one else remembers called Brandon Inge.
Yes, I remember Inge.
Wait,
I thought it was Peter Inge.
Peter Inge. You're right.
Yeah.
Guys like that that were like dumbfounding with their technique, and they were like hard to solve. And then I think the second era is like the first wave of real specialists. And I think that was led by like Alex Smith with like a fusion of technique and variation, a guy that brought a better technique and like a nuanced approach. And I think you're kind of like here, but I think you crest into the third group. And the third era, I think, is the modern era now, which is guys like you and Trevor Baptiste, who are powerful and intimidating as well as technical. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on that whole process, like how to approach looking at face off as a position.
I gotta tell you, Kyle, out of all the people I know who anybody, and this goes into coaches too, that might have been the most intelligent thing I've ever heard when it comes to face offs. Because you're right, it was that way. And it's a shame because I think there was cheating that got so bad for so long that people forget that there were actual technicians. You know, Paul Canabin and you got Paul Canabin, right? Chris Searcy was the first person I'd ever seen face off. The first time because back then you could only see lacrosse if you turned on like ESPN on the championship Saturday, right, or Sunday. So first time I ever saw a face off on outdoor lacrosse was Chris Searcy took it to the rack and scored for Syracuse, and I was like, I want to do that. And Paul Canabin also as a technician, and then also a guy who doesn't get a lot of respect who should is Andy Corno. Andy Corno played for Georgetown. That was the first time I'd studied film and actually saw someone who was methodically, technically working on like what they were doing. And I think you're right, Peter Inge, like all these guys, I think there was never a 1+1=2 way to solve people because everyone just kind of did what worked for them and then you just kept doing that. You know what I mean? Whereas there was no definitive system that was based on any science or math. It was just, this is what works for me and I'm going to keep doing this. And then if you happen to go against somebody whose style was completely conflicted and worked against you, you were screwed. And that's what the FOA, we started using a system. And now you're seeing counters on top of counters because there's always an answer for something because it's always based on angles and the same thing. And guys like Trevor, who is a prototypical, like you couldn't ask for a better human body to be a face-off guy, is now also that technically sound. So you're going to see more and more people like that bashing heads over the next generation. I think you're right. I think there are three generations, and I think I crest over between two and three pretty much, yeah.
All right, awesome. I thought I was going to get torn apart there. That's good. I'm very excited. All right, so you know, you've been always outspoken and honest with most of your opinions about everything. And, you know, I'm going to ask you this, and we're kind of on the edge of something that just happened with the league. But, like, what's the biggest issue with Major League Lacrosse? And what's one thing you would change if you were the commissioner, like, right away?
You know, I think people always play that game. Like, if you were commissioner, what would you do? If you were commissioner, what would you do? I don't think it's commissioner. I think it's the ownership of the league. Has to sit back and say, all right, we're throwing X amount of dollars into a league. And people love to crush you know, Commissioner Gross. They love to crush the office. I think that Commissioner Gross and I think that the other guys in the office, which is like three, are doing what they think is best, but there's just not enough manpower. It's like if you and I said, hey, let's start an NBA team together. All right, what do we got to do? All right, well, you have to do these 800 things, and I have to do these 800 things, and we have to do them really well so we can run a league real well. There's just not enough manpower. We'd have to hire a general manager. We'd have to hire a vice general manager. There's just not enough people doing things. So there's like three emails or phone numbers you call in the league when you have an issue with something. And when you have every player has an issue, because that's just sports, they just can't get to everything. And I just feel like there's a definitive conflict of interest in the footwear in the league. There's limitations on endorsements because of certain things. And I don't think it's a commissioner issue. I think if a new commissioner comes in tomorrow, they're going to be handcuffed by the same problems. And be like, all right, well, here's the TV deal that's and here's the LXN deal. And everyone has to wear New Balance. And it's just like, if I were a commissioner, like I don't know how I would take this deal. Like I would have to sit back and be like, I must have the rights to rewrite all of this, or else I don't know what we're going to do. You know, I mean, we're 17 years in. I really envision us being a franchise league at this point. We're still single entity, and I feel like we're just on a raft with no motor, and we're just praying. And it sucks because, you know, I've spent a third of my life in this league, and I really wanted it to continue to go up. And I think players are always willing to help. We just don't know where we can help, and we don't know who to call because there's only like two or three people in the league office that are working, and the rest of it's interns. You know, I mean, look [S2] Yeah. [S1] At the stats. So it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know what I would do if I was commissioner because I just feel like it's an ownership of the league issue.
Let's switch gears a little bit. What's your best locker room / road trip story involving a bus or a plane?
I have a laundry list of Langtree stories that I can't tell. I got a lot. We always talked about, you know, if the league ever went under, well, at least we have one hell of a book we can all write. But you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the league. And I just, one of my favorite memories in general is after the end of the season, whether you get like championship weekend used to be just that hellacious two games and then one game the next day thing. And like, I just remember like Harvard Stadium was one of the first championship weekends I was at. And we guys lose games. Like you've watched the first semifinal and the team that lost, all of a sudden I just see their whole team just stripping and just throwing all of their clothes and pads into the stands and people going nuts. Like you're at the gladiatorial games. And I just thought that was hilarious. And like over the years, that just becomes part of the thing. Like when you had that championship weekend, the losing team, the people were pumped that you lost because they're like, oh good, Paul Rabel lost. That means I'm going to get his glove. So that was one of the memories that I'm always going to remember is that when you would lose a championship weekend, everyone would just strip and just throw everything. And I remember Langtree literally took his jock off and like tossed it into the stands. So that's just like something that's always going to stick out to me because I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my God, we have to do that if we lose.
That's awesome. Obviously you're with, you know, running the Face Off Academy and you're trying out for Team USA. What are your future plans in lacrosse? Anything past that, or is that kind of the focus for short and long term?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in this thing now. Like, I don't plan on going anywhere. I'm going to talk to LSN. I've talked to Chris Marshall about possibly doing some games next year, commentary-wise. I've spoken to Kark about maybe doing, like, being on the sidelines during an ESPN game, just kind of explaining face-offs since no one ever does that. You know, Quinn will throw out his two cents about face-offs, which is usually wrong, but, like, no one will actually say, like, oh, well, you can tell here John Guarino's standing up because when he rolls his wrist, he can come underneath the guy he's going against and get leverage on the ball. No, instead it's like, oh, he's just mixing things up out there. So I think commentary to try to, like, explain what the hell the face-off is to people, especially casual fans, would be cool. And then Face-Off Academy, obviously this opens up my summer weekend, so I can really kind of go ham during the summer. and get to places where they're begging for us to be, but we just can't get to because of games. So I'm excited to be able to do more events, be more accessible to my athletes. But I also, planning on opening up my YouTube channel, making more instructional videos, and hopefully doing some commentating and having fun with it.
Yeah, I'm sure you love the MLL face-off for the championship. Because I was sitting there like, are they reffing these face-offs? Dude is like rolling forward on every draw.
Yeah, in the MLL, over the last 3 or 4 years, when I really had my success, I studied more referee tape than anything. I would find out who the refs were, like when the league sends a thing out on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'd study film on the referees to know what kind of craziness they do. And then you're way more prepared. Except for Denver, they never let you know what refs are going to be, which is kind of interesting.
All right. Last question, the big one. What do you want to be remembered for?
I just want people to remember that I cared. You know, like if you played with me, you know, I mean, like guys, I get questions all the time from kids. They're like, oh, is this guy a jerk or is that guy a jerk? And everybody in the league, everybody in the MLL is a good person. I like every single person in the MLL. And we're all out there just trying to do the same thing. And I just want people to remember, like, you know, Gregor Emelin, like when he played with you, he killed himself to try and win for you. He cared about you as a player and as a person. When he played against you, he respected you. And he really wanted this league to be successful. And I cared about everything. And I don't have any regrets after this career because I know that every day I gave everything I had, whether it was training or playing or whatever. And, you know, when people remember me, I just want them to remember, like, man, that guy really gave everything when he played. And that's all that really matters to me.
Greg Grinlein, thanks for joining us on the MLL podcast. Good luck trying out for Team USA and with the Face Off Academy in the future. And, you know, thanks for everything, man. It was great, you know, as someone that covers the league to watch someone play hard every time and, you know, self-sacrifice and battle through injuries and stuff. I think, you know, you probably don't get enough credit for that. But for me, that's how I'm going to remember it anyway.
So. I really respect that. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to the Inside the Cross MLL podcast. We had to take a break real quick to thank one of our sponsors, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to create incredible home cooking and make it accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. As a result, beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals, produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming, and because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they reduce food waste. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. Those who spend a lot at restaurants or high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Some of the featured upcoming meals include summer vegetable and egg paninis with Calabrian chili mayonnaise and a caprese salad. Sounds delicious. Soy-glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans. Skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. I don't know what those are, but I want some right now. So just know that you have all of these options if you go with Blue Apron. Blue Apron is also affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. It's a lot of variety too. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Check out this week's menu at Blue Apron and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And now, Chaz Woodson. We are back on the MLL podcast, and we welcome in Florida Launch attackman. He's a legend, in my mind at least. the great Brown State player, Chaz Woodson. Chaz, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and I wanted to ask you what led to your decision to finally retire, and you had a pretty interesting answer. So why don't you kind of explain where you're coming from?
Well, I mean, it's for me, I guess, the answer, I guess, to explain to everybody, the answer was I'm probably never going to sign that sheet that says I'm officially retired. But in part, that's because you never know. I didn't expect to play this year, and, you know, here we are. But more importantly, I think it's just a mental thing. I think it doesn't have to be, like, it's tough for me to, like, sit here and say, no, that's it, I'm done, I'm never going to play, and make it official, you know. I think in my mind, for a number of reasons, I'm done. I'm very okay with it. I was not as okay with it prior to this year. So I think that's the big difference.
And why is that, you think?
Well, how much time you got? The short answer is this. I would say the last 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, of those last 6 years I played prior to this year, I was only happy with one of those years. 2009 and 10, I was injured. I only played basically a half a season each one of those. 2011, I was gone and didn't expect to come back. 2012, I came back and had a great year. And 2013, I actually, I didn't have as great a year, and I didn't really enjoy it, to be honest with you. And so 2014 came around, I really didn't enjoy that and didn't feel like I got a fair shake in things. And we can talk more about that if you want, but I really just didn't, I didn't feel like I got a fair shake. We'll leave it at that for now. And I only played two games that season. Well, three, I guess, because they called me last minute on a Friday afternoon and asked if I was in town and if I could play. So I played three games and then got cut. Never heard a word from anybody else for the rest of that season. Never heard a word from anybody in 15. Never heard a word from anybody in 16. So it wasn't that I had actively tried to retire. It was more so that I never had an opportunity. And in all fairness, I only reached out to two organizations in that time. Basically got no response. And so I just figured, you know, as time goes on, that's how it works. You know, everybody's time is up at some point. So I figured the league was moving on and, you know, there's only so many spots. I wasn't getting one of them. So I had sort of resigned myself to that being the end. And I was okay with that part of it, but I was never really okay with how it all shook out. So when this opportunity came up, it gave me an opportunity to kind of settle that aspect of it for me. You know, and if I didn't make the roster this year, if I went out to training camp and I just wasn't good enough to play, I'd have been okay with that. But it at least gave me the opportunity to go out there and to prove to myself and to everybody else that I could still play. And I got that opportunity. And I did it. I had a great time doing it. I'm good. I can move on now.
Yeah, you came to peace with it on your own terms. That's fair.
100%. I get to walk away on my own terms. And that was a huge, huge deal for me mentally as an athlete.
So delving into kind of the more positive aspect of your time in the league, what's your favorite moment playing in Major League Lacrosse?
Narrowing it down to one moment is probably pretty tough. I think it was cool to play my very first game. I think the next thing I could probably do is bring it back to just my time in LA, the 2008 season. I just thought we had a phenomenal group, and you know, if you ask anybody that was a part of that organization, you know, probably with very few exceptions, if any, everybody enjoyed their time there and thought it was a well-run organization. They treated us like pros, and it was fun. We had just a great group of guys that it was awesome to be around everybody every weekend. Like, it was something I looked forward to every single week. Whether we were in LA or whether we were elsewhere, it was enjoyable. I think if I think back on the whole, you know, 13-year process of it all, that would be my most enjoyable experience.
What advice would you give to future lacrosse players that want to play in the MLL?
Just work. You know, the MLL, you know, there's only so many spots, right? And there's a lot more capable players out there. So I know guys that have been on practice squads that are certainly capable of playing in this league, but never really got a shot. So I don't think making MLL a goal is great. But I think at the end of the day, you have to make it your goal to be the best player you can possibly be. You know, and then hope that you get your shot. And when you get your shot, you got to take it. It's like any other level of lacrosse or any other level of sport, right? You work your tail off to be the best you can possibly be and hope for your opportunity. When your opportunity comes, then you got to make the most of it. And the thing about this league, because it's so small, is if you don't make the most of it, you're out. So that would be my advice. Work your tail off to be the best lacrosse player and best athlete you can be. Don't worry about the end part of it. Worry about the process part of it.
To kind of build on that, throughout your career, not just as a player, but also as a coach, you've worked to bring more diversity to lacrosse, and most recently worked with Nation United as a coach. What's that process been like, and what does it mean to you to have been able to contribute to that?
Well, I think, again, the simple answer to that is doors have been opened for me, and I feel, and maybe it's just the way I was raised, but I feel like it's an obligation to hold those doors open for others and to work to open other doors for others. And so the diversity aspect of it has been something that is important to me. But at the end of the day, it's really just about giving back. I've helped, I think, the diversity front as much as I've helped any other aspect of it in terms of giving back and helping to create opportunities. And I think we're given a platform as athletes and certainly as lacrosse players do something that is bigger than MLL and that will outlast the MLL or outlast, you know, what people's memories of are of us as players. And again, I guess maybe that's just how I was raised in terms of the coaches I played for and my father who played, and, you know, other members of my family that are big into serving and giving back to others. But I think that's what it's been about for me, you know, and that's far more enjoyable for me. And coaching, even the aspect of coaching, which it is also giving back, that's more enjoyable to me than actually playing. And it has been for quite a while now.
It's interesting. You mentioned your dad. I was saving it for later, but I have a question about your dad, or Coach Woody, as I have known him. What's the best locker room road trip story you have from the MLL, and your best story involving your dad, who I have met working the old Brown camps back in the day when I was a coach?
Wow. Road trip MLL story and story involving my dad. So I didn't think I had one, but here it is. The best road trip story was just the worst like 24 hours ever. We had a home and home when I was playing in Ohio. We had a home and home with Toronto or Hamilton, wherever they were at the time. I guess Toronto? I don't know. Flew into Rochester, got picked up by the bus, drove across the border. This was 2013 because we got stuck. So, and Steele lost his passport or left his passport at home or something like that. It was just a long, 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 long 24 hours. Connor was, Conbro Chill, excuse me, was on the bus making songs. We were on this like 1970s bus too. It was far from up to date. When we got up there, we played, then hopped on a bus, got stuck at the border coming back. Then we stopped at a rest stop. And, you know, the only thing open there is McDonald's, and it's 2-3 in the morning. Of course, they only have one person working back there, two people. So there's 30 of us, 30, 40 of us in McDonald's trying to eat at 3 in the morning, all to get back to Ohio to play a game that night. So that was probably the craziest road story. With the exception of one night, probably not many people have heard this story. Matt Casey and I were roommates for a while in LA and in Ohio. And we were playing, I think this was the first year in Ohio, we were playing, no. It had to be LA because we were playing in Chicago. And part of our routine, along with Greg Downing and a couple other guys, we used to always go to a movie the night of the game or the day of the game when we were home. So we'd have team breakfast, we'd come back, we'd go to a movie, we'd come back, take a nap, then get up and go to the stadium. Well, we flew into Chicago on a Saturday, played Sunday night. We decided to go see The Dark Knight. It's coming out. I think it came out that weekend.
Yeah.
Nobody else wanted to go, so it was him and I. Kyle Harrison dropped us off. And by the time the movie ends, there's nobody around. It's like late night. Nobody can pick us up. We get a ride home with the cops. So now we're stuck in the backseat of a cop car, which already looks terrible. And is by far the most uncomfortable place I've ever been in my life. And we get back to the hotel. There's some girl that's crying hysterically in the lobby. So we're talking to her. Turns out she had gone there with her boyfriend had flown her in. They got into a big argument. He canceled her return flight and her hotel room. So she's trying to work that out. We're hungry, so we decide to walk to White Castle with her. Then we get to White Castle. First of all, we're walking to White Castle. Some guy tries to run us over. Literally sped up. I don't know what he was thinking, but we're walking down the street. He speeds up. We jump out of the road. He stops because we probably yelled some choice words to him. He stops, gets out of the car. He can't be any younger than 70 years old. He starts walking to us, gets a little closer, then goes back, gets in his car, and drives away. Then we get to White Castle. There's a guy that looks exactly like Borat who's been talking to himself, smiling and talking to himself. For when we got in there, they said like he'd been doing this for the last 20, 30 minutes. We sat there and ate White Castle. He sat there and talked the whole time. Every time somebody comes in, they're taking pictures of him and like video. And so that was our night. And then we walked back to the hotel and got up and played a game the next day.
Did you guys win?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
That's awesome.
But it was certainly the strangest night. Of my ammo. There was one stranger night or one stranger incident, but I can't talk about it on here.
That's fair.
Actually, there were two. I'll give you this, the last one I got.
All right.
There were two Stranger Nights. This one I probably shouldn't even tell because it's semi-embarrassing, but whatever. It happens. It's life. We lose a game in Ohio 2013. I'm really not happy about it. Decide not to go out that night. Not that I went out a whole bunch that year. But I decided not to go out that night. I'm sitting in my bed. I can't sleep. And I get hungry. So I decided to... Now, mind you, it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I decided I want some donuts from a vending machine. Go down the hall, put my money in. My donuts get stuck. Try to shake them out. Doesn't work. So I tried to reach through the bottom to pull them out because they're, you know, they're pretty close. My arm gets stuck in the vending machine. So I'm on the floor with my arm stuck in the vending machine for what seems like about, you know, it seems like forever. It seems like easily 20, 30 minutes. It was probably about 5 minutes. But at that time of night, I'm like, you know, everything closes down at 2 o'clock. Guys are going to be coming back to the hotel soon. I don't want to be on the ground stuck with my arm in the vending machine or, you know, have security come up or whatever. So I'm panicked, but I managed to like wiggle my way out. But it was a rough 5 minutes or however long I was there.
And you didn't get the donuts.
I did not get the donuts.
Oh, man.
It was a pretty bad night.
It's a harrowing tale. You didn't tell me the story about your dad, though.
Oh, my dad. All right, what am I thinking? My dad. Kind of put me on the spot with that one. A story about my dad. Jeez. My brother is really good with this type of stuff. My brother's got a million of these stories. I don't know, man. Maybe some of these. I don't know. He gets these shoes, man, sometimes that God only knows where they came from. And I'm not talking about like sneakers or like, you know, I'm not that he's old, but, you know, not like old guy shoes or anything, but just like he had these pair of boots one time that looked like a cross between like moon boots and just I don't know, man. They were black and red, and he used to wear them everywhere. And then this is when my brother was in college, so of course, you know, they got the red in there. So anytime he's going to see my brother or like watching an Ohio State game, he's wearing them, you know, because they match, so he's supporting the team. We just, every time he would come around, my brother would just look at the shoes and then look at me and start cracking up. But, you know, my dad's a good dude, man. He kind of walks to his own beat, always has. And, you know, the cool thing about him is that everybody loves him.
Oh, yeah.
No matter where he goes, no matter what he's doing, everybody loves my dad. You know, and I find, not necessarily in that regard, although I hope that's true. But I find that I tend to be a lot like him, and I've, especially in my mannerisms as a coach. You know, I've seen him, but probably the funniest things he does is just fall asleep. He used to fall asleep during practices all the time. During football practice, I definitely saw him fall asleep standing up from time to time, just bored out. I don't know if he was bored or just tired, man, at the end of a long day. Saw him fall asleep on the bench a couple of times during middle school basketball games. But those are terrible sometimes. I can say that I've almost fallen asleep during a middle school basketball game on the bench when I was not the coach, head coach. But yeah, he's just such a good dude and kind of unique, does his own thing, and he's like worry free, you know, so nothing really bothers him that much. And, you know, that's all I got for you on him.
Yeah, I mean, I've met him a bunch of times. He cracks me up every time I talk to him.
Yeah, man.
He's great. I couldn't, like, talk to you without asking you about your dad. What are your future plans in lacrosse, if any?
That's a good question, and it's something I've thought about. I don't really know. I really enjoy coaching. I really enjoy high school coaching. I enjoy doing player development stuff. I think that's one thing that probably not many people realize that I do. Like, everybody does private lessons now, and I did that for a while, but it's, to me, it was like a waste of time. Like, there's some good money to be made in it, but I hit a point a long, long time ago after I started doing it that, like, it was, if you don't have kids that are really serious about getting better and moving to the next level, the private lesson stuff is just about money. And I've never been just about money in it, and it just wasn't worth my time. And there was a guy that I coach with who is now the shooting coach, the first ever, this is his second year, but the first ever shooting coach the Miami Heat have ever hired. And he used to coach basketball at our high school, where I coach now at Ransom Everglades. And the more I watched him, the more I became intrigued with the way he teaches things. And so the athletes that I've worked with down here, it's all player development stuff. Like, I don't spend much time just running through drills. I've actually taken a lot of stuff this guy has done with basketball players and adapted it for lacrosse. And I actually really enjoy doing that type of work. I've had less time over the last year or so to do it, but that, I think we're hitting that point where more people are starting to, or more athletes and players are starting to want that, in this sport, for better or for worse. So that type of thing is cool. I enjoy doing it. I love doing the Nation United stuff. I don't think collegiate coaching is really in the picture for me unless I can be at a place where I can really build the program out the way I want and to impact the players that would come through the program in the way I want. It wouldn't be so. I'm as competitive as anybody else, but it would have to be a place that's not as concerned with winning and losing as they are with creating a solid program that graduates, men of character. So I think if I came across that program, it would certainly intrigue me enough to pursue it. But I don't have any interest in, trying to grind and work my way up the ladder to be a coach at Virginia or Syracuse or Brown or Duke or anything like that. Just not in the picture. I much prefer working with high school guys and kids that are just kind of hungry to get better and that are playing the sport for a different reason,
So closing it out, this is kind of a loaded question, I guess, but because I know that you're a little bit more, I would say nuanced is probably the best word. You're a complicated dude. Like, you have a lot of interests, and playing lacrosse isn't the only thing that defines you. But with that in mind, try to answer this question. Like, what do you want to be remembered for just in this part of your life? Like, right, moving on to the next chapter. Like, what do you want to be remembered for as a player?
Right. So I was just asked this question about an hour ago, and I don't know if I think I was a little wordy with it, maybe, because I wasn't exactly sure how to answer it. But I think as a player, I want to be remembered, or I hope to be remembered, as somebody that, well, let me put it like this. I don't think there's that many players, and this is not a slight to anybody. There are a number of good players out there. There are a number of players that are far better than I am, or that, are more accomplished, or whatever you want to say about them. But there aren't that many players that I personally would pay money to watch. I hope that
people that paid money at games that, that I was playing in felt that they got their money's worth. You know, whether that means I was exciting or fun to watch, I hope people feel they got their money's worth when I was playing. And then on top of that, just that I came to play every day, that I competed, and that I was a team guy, right? And, you know, and if I inspired somebody along the way, which I think I have, then I've done my job.
That's a great note to go on. I'm going to tell a Chaz Woodson story.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell it to you. So a lot of my college friends got Cannons tickets like right when you came out of college, and they went to one game. They got season tickets, but then they went to like one game in your first season there, right? And you had this insane like split into a roll into a dive shot that my friend Serge still talks about. And when they traded you and I didn't tell him, he blamed me and canceled his tickets.
Why did he blame you?
Because he knew I was like covering the league or whatever. He's like, you didn't even tell me. This is all your fault. You couldn't have stopped it. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. It's not how any of this works. But, you know, people that are outside of lacrosse like come in. So, I mean, you're at least one person's favorite player. I just wanted to let you know that, even probably still to this day. Because he didn't go back to MLL after that, but he definitely remembers you. And I just wanted to tell you that story. So
that's awesome.
Now it's on record. But Chaz Woodson, thank you very much for joining us on the MLL podcast. Really appreciate everything. Good luck with whatever you do in the future. If you come back, you know, let me know, and we'll check it out.
If it happens, man, it'll be silent like it was this time.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll look forward to it, even if it doesn't happen.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.